Welcome to UX Maturity. This is a podcast where we have conversations about what it's like to be a designer in tech. I'm your co-host, Susan.
And I'm your co-host, Sandrine.
If you like our podcast, please rate and review it on your podcast platform, if that's possible, and follow and share the podcast to help spread the word. We are UX_maturity on Twitter, UX Maturity on LinkedIn, and our website is uxmaturitypodcast.com. This is episode 57, and we are going to introduce a new theme this week. We're going to talk about one of my favorite things as part of being a designer, which are insights. So we're going to spend a few episodes deep diving into different subcategories or subtopics around insights. And today we're specifically talking about being data-driven versus being data-informed when it comes to insights. So there's clearly some relation between insights and data that we're going to deep dive into, but I suppose a good place for us to start is to talk about what insights are in the first place. So Sandrine, do you want to define insights?
Yeah, sure. So I guess insights for me are, they can be a combination of data that tell you something. So I guess an insight for me is a form of learning or perspective into a situation, a problem, a person of some sort that tells me something about them. And I can reuse that piece of information, obviously, for making decisions later on. So for me, that's what an insight is. It's not just a metric or data points. It has to be more than that. It can be an interpretation over the data as well. That's what makes it an insight for me. So that's how I would define it. What about you?
Yes, I'm the same. I think there's a layer on top of data, which is all around analysis and interpretation and looking at patterns of data. And it's through those activities of analysis, interpretation, looking at data from different sources or data over time or observations over time, from those things you interpret something, the output of those interpretations or the outcomes of them are insights.
Yeah, it's interesting how we're both, I guess, seeing insights as more than just data. It's like that layer on top, which is quite interesting.
Cool. So where do insights fit into the design process or our design processes?
Yeah, so I guess for me, insights come into that you, going back again to the double diamond process, because it's quite universal. For me, insights will be generated in that first, obviously, diamond, in that first diverge, after you've started, actually in the diverge, but also in the converge, in a way where you're starting to define, highlight patterns, and then starting to extract your key insights from your pool of research. So actually they're actually arising more in the converge phase, actually. So I think that's kind of where they fit in. And then you're meant to integrate your insights within your opportunity statements and kind of carry on those insights. So your insights should still be living in some form in the later stages of your design as well, to make sure that they are embedded into your opportunity setting. You can refer back to them as well when you need to go back to user problems or, you know, I don't know, looking back at pain points or needs, you might want to go back to your insights for that reason. So yeah, I think they're being generated in that first diamond for sure, but they should blend in and infuse the second diamond. Okay, so I kind of obviously explained that for me, insights kind of get formed in that first diamond of the process. And I was wondering whether, I guess, insights that you carry in your process are, I guess, a bit different depending if your team is data-driven or data-informed. And I was wondering if there's intrinsically, if the way you treat insights, the way you treat data, obviously, will be quite different. So I was wondering, maybe we can start by what you think is the difference between being data-driven versus being data-informed.
I think data-driven is quite, I think of it as quite strict or quite rigid in some ways, whereas data-informed is a bit looser and a bit more flexible and adaptable, which is a very fluffy way of describing them. But I think what I observe from teams or organizations that strive to be more on the data-driven side is that they make decisions almost exclusively based on data. Whereas teams or organizations that are more data-informed, they make decisions that are based on data, influenced by data. They take data into account, but they also make decisions based on, for example, what the strategic objectives are, what stakeholders think, how the competitive landscape is looking like, what the market forces are like. So data-informed teams have more inputs into their decision-making process than data-driven teams, I think. But they're not, I mean, they're not two binary things. It's not like you're either data-driven or you're data-informed. I actually think a lot of teams that claim they're very data-driven aren't as data-driven as I think they are, that they're more on the data-informed side, because there's so many factors that come into how we make decisions. And one thing, this is a bit of a bugbear of mine, but one thing I like to also point out is that data isn't just quantitative data. Data is also qualitative. So I think some people tend to think of data as just the hard numbers or metrics or the results of an A/B test, for example. But qualitative data is also data. It's just a different type of data.
Yeah, I agree on this one. I think, interestingly, for me, data-informed teams as well would be a little bit less risk-averse and a bit more keen to also follow their intuition, like their product sense or their design intuition as well, and go to testing actually concepts faster, I guess. And they might also diverge a little bit from what the raw data might be telling them as well, because they apply that layer of expertise on top, being like, okay, the data tell us this, but, you know, based on our past learnings, on our expertise, on, you know, where the business wants to go, we know that we can't apply also that data purely in itself. So we need to figure out how we interpret that data and then potentially diverge a little bit from it, but at least be informed by it, knowing that, you know, this is where the data is and we're taking this approach, because we also have other elements to take into consideration. Like you said, stakeholders, business direction. Also, past learnings, I think, are sometimes overlooked. So I think these are really, really important to take into account. And I find that data-driven teams can be also, they can have a lot of process in place, because everything has to go through, as you say, it's quite rigid. So it has to be, the data has to show that there's an issue, and you can't obviously not start there. It often starts with a piece of data of some form. And I feel like, yeah, it's quite rigid. Then it has to be either validated or you have to get more data. And sometimes it can be, yeah, basically kind of a feeding circle where you just, a piece of data incites you to get more data, and then you start getting a lot of data, and you actually end up adding a lot of burden to that process, and you struggle to kind of get to that solution stage as well. But it's a fine line, I think, to get, because you can't obviously just process. Can you go blindly without any insights or data? Like, would you consider that this is a good process? Obviously, I mean, I don't think it would be. So you have to kind of find that line. But I wonder, actually, do you think you can be ignoring data altogether? Or like, do you think data-informed teams sometimes actually have an instance where they ignore data as well?
I think you can definitely ignore data and still design. It just isn't necessarily a very good design, or it might not necessarily lead to the outcomes you want. And so my opinion is that good design comes from incorporating insights into your design process and being informed by data. So yeah, it's again the case of it depends, right? It depends on what is the specific thing you're designing. I think my concern is more when teams have this almost like high level blanket approach, all encompassing approach of either we don't design based on any data. Okay, I don't know if any teams do it like that, but just to take an extreme example, or other teams who are very explicitly, we are data driven. All our design decisions are based on data. It's a bit. It really does depend. And I think the thing that draws some people to the idea of data driven design is that it has this veil of being very scientific and of removing ambiguity and of removing subjectivity from your design process. If you can say all our design decisions are based on hard data, it's very objective, we've measured everything, we've tested and experimented, then it gives you this false sense of security that you've done the correct thing. And I don't think that's true because there's so much subjectivity in how you set up your experiments. There's so much subjectivity in how you identify what is data and how do you track and measure those pieces of data. And there's subjectivity in how you interpret the data. So yeah, being data driven, I don't think means that you're being completely objective and devoid of subjective interpretation in what comes out of it from a design perspective.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what bugs me a little bit with the data-driven approach is that basically it's prioritizing work that is exclusively driven by a piece of data. And I think sometimes we can actually be misled by data, like raw data. Like I think going back to the episode that we had where you were talking about accessibility, you may well have a piece of data that tells you that you don't have anyone with accessibility needs accessing your platform. Therefore, you don't need to design, do accessibility by design, for example. And actually, the data is probably never going to show you that you have people with accessibility needs if you never really make your platform accessible in the first place as well. So I think sometimes you can really fall into those traps of not interpreting your data in the right way. And you might actually just prioritize work that is a bit meaningless over time as well. Like if you just always focus on improving a piece of data or a piece of metric without really looking at the wider space around it, you might actually miss out on generating value and solving real problems. Like sometimes there's problems that start where there's no data as well. And I think you might really miss out on these elements. And I think data-driven initiatives are really helpful if you want to optimize. But I think sometimes it just falls short for innovating or, I guess, solving, creating new value for your product.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's especially around when you do more innovation work or conceptual work or, yeah, when you need to be more creative. That's when, yes, you're data informed, but then you also consider lots of other things. I think creativity, especially, I don't know, what is data driven creativity? Is it DALL-E? Is it like you just feed some input into a black box machine and it outputs something creative or innovative? And there's this human aspect of design as well, as the humanity of us as designers, the humanity of the people we talk to, the humanity of society around us. And it's all these high level concepts of values and principles and ethics and morals and doing the right thing, plus a sprinkle, many sprinkles of creativity. And you can't measure those things. They're not data. So yeah, I very passionately am more in the data informed design camp than the data driven camp.
Yeah, I mean, not surprisingly, I very much am as well. I think we underestimate sometimes how much understanding we've built of a problem as well when we've been in a space for quite a while. And And also your intuition as a both a designer and a human being can be quite important actually sometimes when to figure out where you think you can bring value or how you can make a product more intuitive and these sort of things. And sometimes relying purely on data is not always the best way. But I think, interestingly, I think when you say to people to rely on their intuition, it's almost like it's appearing very risky to them. And it's almost like we're seeing our intuition as a very flawed factor when actually we all rely on our intuition as human beings, and we are designing for people that have intuition as well. So I find it interesting that we're trying to design for people, but sometimes just almost want to put up people aspects of, you know, aspects of what makes us a human on the side when we're designing. So yeah, I was wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, this is really interesting, I think, because I tend to think of intuition as this almost like a muscle you build up. And I always talk about muscle on this podcast. Stop talking about muscle, Susan. But it's this part of you that you train and that you grow over time from experiences. So designer intuition, for example, is something that I tend to think of it as kind of gathering experiences and lessons as a designer throughout time until I have this like built-in pile of lessons that form my intuition every time I design something new. Very fluffy way of describing intuition. And I think when we think about being driven by data, often what I hear is that people who are more in the data-driven side of things, they don't trust people's intuition, or they trust data, hard data, more than people's intuition because it feels less biased. Data feels less biased, and intuition is inherently biased, or it's subjective to the whoever human person has that intuition. And so data-driven design feels more, again, like we said, objective and rigorous. But I don't think being data-driven, again, removes human bias, because there's intuition in how you interpret data as well. And there's intuition in how you decide how to use that data. And I don't think the solution to being less subjective is to not rely on intuition, because that is subjective. I think it's important to instead incorporate intuition into your design process and acknowledge that it's there. Like, don't pretend that intuition isn't there and guiding your design decision. It is there. We all use it to different extents. And what I do think is important is to make sure there's a diverse range of intuitions as part of your design process. So, for example, if you're just one designer designing in isolation and you don't involve other people, then the intuition is going to be only yours. Whereas if you're more collaborative and inclusive and you involve the rest of your team, stakeholders, and the users who are going to use the thing, we all have in aggregate lots of intuitions, and the diversity of those intuitions, I think, lead to better design outcomes. So yeah, design with intuition, not against it. I sometimes run into situations where I maybe present a design or showcase something to people for feedback. And if those people are a bit outside of the design process, sometimes the feedback is of the type, oh, how many people said this, for example, or how many people... It's kind of like they're fishing for data in our design decisions when we present design back. And I sometimes feel that if I can't justify design decisions with hard data, then what we're presenting is being dismissed by these more data-hungry people, stakeholders. Do you have advice on how to handle these situations?
Yeah, I think that's where obviously you need to be data informed, right? So often when I get these questions, I try to go back to the core problem and why the problem is worth solving. And often that you'd have quite a good piece of data to talk about in that. Like, you shouldn't obviously prioritize a lot of work that has absolutely no data at all related to it. That would be very risky unless you're very much starting from the ground up. And even then. So I think you always have some form of data to bring back, right? You can obviously say how you started tackling that problem and what you've discovered throughout your research. I think, as you said, sometimes the qualitative aspect that is a bit hard for people to trust. So sometimes it's about explaining how, I guess, pure data, quantitative data, does not really explain why. And that's why we went to seek that why through qualitative as well. And then once you get, obviously, all that information, then it's about, okay, what's the best way to solve this? And the way we solve this is a combination of what we've learned from the data. It's also a combination of what are our design principles. I design very differently at Typeform than I design in previous places, for example, because we have a different brand, we have a different tone of voice, we have a different, just very different principles. So just the way the solution is brought to life will be different based on that as well. And then also based on what you think works and what is the right interaction pattern as a designer, what is the right flow, what is the simplest way, the most intuitive way to bring that feature to users. And that would be probably a range of calls that you'd make as a designer from your expertise. And that's, I mean, I don't know for you, but I don't think that's, for me, that's data-backed, where I don't have a computer in my head, so like figuring out if that's the right interaction, the right component or something like that. It's just something that I know and that then I validate with my team when I bring it to design critique. So I guess it depends, obviously, where the question comes up. I think, yeah, sometimes it's about why are we even doing this and is this worth doing? And these are all great questions to ask. And I do think you should be data informed on those questions. Like, you should know why you're doing something, and that should rely on some form of data. So usually it's best to, you know, dig out that data at that time to answer those questions. And then in terms of how you bring that solution to life, well, then I guess, yeah, that would be backed more by your intuition and then your expertise. And then there is supposed to be a validation process, obviously, after that, where you're going to go and test with your users. You're not going to potentially launch that feature to everyone at once, and so forth. So that's how usually I deal with that.
Yeah, that's great advice. It's turn it into almost an education piece where you describe and explain how you design and what are the factors that influence your design process and why it's important to, for example, have design principles and that sort of thing.
Sorry, I've just remembered something. Sometimes there's like some weird data-driven things that come up, like, for example, when you're looking at a flow and someone tells you, data tells us that less steps, for example, drives better conversions. But actually there's times where having more steps with less information in each step is actually better for users and would potentially actually draw better results as well. And I think that's also where you see sometimes the intuition versus data-driven type of decisions that come up.
It makes me sometimes think that data is used as a weapon sometimes to kind of like win an argument. And often what happens is that data like that is taken out of context or has gone through so many wrong layers of interpretation that it's meaningless in the context it's being used as a weapon. So yeah, like the whole steps thing is often used. I've heard that before as well. Or the other one that used to at least be mentioned a lot is that people can only, data or science or research shows that people can only hold 7 things in their memory plus minus 2 or something like that. So therefore we should only have 7 plus minus 2 items in the menu, stuff like that. And I think it's quite dangerous to do that because you haven't looked into where that data comes from or where that piece of research comes from and what the context was. And in all likelihood, it was a very different context from what you're looking at right now, what the design is you're looking at right now.
Yeah, I think actually I kind of want to go back on when I said that for me, data-driven included qualitative data, because I'm actually, now that I'm thinking on it, I'm not actually sure that most people who are data-driven actually includes qualitative data. I think they tend to distrust qualitative data. And that makes me think sometimes I see some teams over-focusing on A-B tests, results, and testing things because they are so scared of testing too much and not being able to track things that they completely shrink or reduce the experience that is being built to the point where the test is meaningless and actually doesn't provide any value whatsoever to users. And I think that's just quite an interesting approach where, yes, you're being data driven, but you're not making good decisions because you're just launching things that you know are not likely to succeed. And sometimes I think that's where your intuition comes in to see like, yes, I can track this piece of work well. Yes, the data told me that the previous test failed, but actually maybe that solution completely needs to be, you know, rethought, or maybe what we're shrinking that MVP to, for example, is not simply enough for our users to actually get the value from it. So therefore, it's just going to fail and it's not an improvement on what was there before. So I find it interesting sometimes how these can just come in the mix.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's a classic thing where you look too closely, too stripped down on one specific thing. Like you, for example, do in an A-B test, you optimize for the local maximum. You optimize that little button or whatever you're looking at, but you might miss the global maximum or the big picture. And it could be that you're focusing on too small of a problem and you're missing a pile of problems that are elsewhere, or you're missing the big picture. So that's the other part I wanted to add as well. It's a question of what's the perspective you're looking at, like what's the lens you're looking at when it comes to the design problem you're dealing with.
I also think we've become massively data driven lately because, you know, there's been that big trend you know, in these last few years that data is the new oil and everyone is tracking everything they can. And I feel like we're piling data on data on data and we have so many pieces of data to deal with, so much that we can actually compute as human beings. And I'm just wondering, it's like, do we even need to track that much data to gather that much data? I just think it's a bit insane sometimes how much we feel like we need to know, when actually there are some things that are pretty straightforward if you just look at it with some common sense, that you don't need to actually back it up by data. Like, I don't know, there's some experiences where whether you have data or not, you would still be able to provide a good experience just based on, I guess, your own expertise, your past learnings, and so forth.
Yeah, and to your point about do we need to track all that data, this is a bit on the side of data-driven versus data-informed, but I think an important thing to also think about is the ethicalness, the ethics around tracking data. I think it's quite dangerous to be so greedy with data and have this mindset of the more we track, the more we'll know and the better products we'll design and build, instead of thinking about what is the absolute minimum data we should track, and is it right that we do screen recordings in various products, the screen recordings of how people are interacting with our product when personal information is on those screen recordings. I feel quite uneasy when I look at, I'm not going to name the product, but you can guess, I feel quite uneasy when I'm looking at these, they're called screen recordings, yeah, like these analytics tools, these screen recordings of people navigating the product I'm being a designer on, and I can see their names and their addresses. And I mean, the product should ideally remove these or what's it called, blur them out. But yeah, and they do to a certain extent, but sometimes the way, depending on how the front end is built, it's not censored. And I don't know, I just feel very uncomfortable that we do this as an industry. So yeah, that's the other part of it. Like, what data is it morally right that we collect about people? So I'd like to ask for your advice on the opposite end of the scenario I asked you about earlier, which is that I sometimes find myself in again, these review sessions, and people, instead of asking for hard data or asking for insights in terms of, you know, how are we making design decisions, they're on the other end of the spectrum where they push back with their opinions. So it's like opinion-driven design. So, you know, like saying things like, oh, I think we should do it this way because this looks better to me, or I like this option better, you know, where it's, yes, maybe some of it is their intuition, but also their taste or opinions, or, you know, which is all flavored by their background. So I'm talking about people who are not the end users. That's different. So yes, what's your advice on navigating opinion-driven design input?
Yes, very good question. That's interesting because, I mean, every piece of feedback, I guess, is an opinion, right, to some extent. Sometimes they're very good opinions that should be definitely considered. I think sometimes these suggestions that you're talking about would go outwardly against the interest of the user, or would be suboptimal for the user. So I guess it's going back either to data you have about users, so insights, or just your intuition as a human being, and trying to build empathy for the user with that person. So basically help the person understand what this design would look like from a user perspective, and basically explain why you don't think that would be the best choice for that user. And you don't have to rely on data for that. You don't have to say, I talked to like this user and he said this, or you don't even have to say like majority of users do this, although sometimes that's great to bring it in. You can literally just say, we have this type of user that we know wants to achieve X, and if they were to come across this flow or this design, they're likely to understand this word, for example, because they don't have the context to understand it's too technical or, you know, too insidey for us. Or they might not understand that piece of the flow because it's not relevant, etc. So you can try to get the person to see it through the lens of the user that is based on your understanding of the user, which is supposed to be data informed. So yeah, you can also do that without going back to raw data facts. I think sometimes these comments will often come up in critiques, and so because you're with fellow designers, usually it's also okay to just break away from the data talk and just kind of focus on why do they also think that interaction pattern is better than another. Like, is there maybe something you missed as well, you know, that could actually make it faster for the user to achieve? But yeah, eventually it's just going back to what would that feel like from a user perspective and user shoes. That's usually what I try to do.
What is curious to me, or interesting to me, not curious, what is interesting to me, and I think a lot of designers and creative people agree with, is there are so many beautiful, well-designed products out there. And I'm talking about, for example, I'm into furniture now, of course, like beautiful furniture, chairs, industrial design things, you know, all these beautiful design icons. And what's interesting to me is to think about like how data informed were the designers in those processes. So thinking about really well-designed things out in the world, there are so many of them that I think are designed by teams or designers who aren't doing user interviews or tracking things or yeah. What do you think? Your thoughts on this?
I don't think that they're not talking to users. I actually think, like, if you take the example of the icons that you just meant, I think there's actually been a lot of investigation around cultural meanings, differences of cultures, how people interpret something visually, facial expressions, how do they change? And I guess these are all kind of some pieces of insights, right? So I do think they rely on insights. They will also rely on what they know, say, as human beings. But I don't know. I don't know if they rely on pure data, like quantitative data. I don't think they would be able to. There are some things where you just simply cannot collect data. Like when you sit in a chair, you can't push a button that says whether you like the experience or not. And there's nothing calculating how often you sit in that chair versus another chair. So I guess, yeah, it's back to direct feedback. And I guess building your understanding of a problem via other means. So, you know, looking at, for the case of the chair, it's about learning about human anatomy, for example. What is an optimal working position, for example, postures and all that. So I guess that's about building your understanding around the problem, but it's not being like data-centered or data-driven about how do we know if people like a chair or another. It's not about that. It's more around what makes a chair comfortable and optimal for working, for example. And I agree, for these things, you can't rely on data. You have to build your knowledge of the problem via other means. And I think we also do that as designers to some extent. Sometimes there's some problems that you have to solve that are a bit more social driven. For example, if you work on a social platform, maybe you have to help people overcome anxiety about posting. Like, you can't just rely on data for that. You have to understand what generates the anxiety, the psychology of it. Like, sometimes there's some really interesting knowledge that you need to dive into that is not data driven related, basically.
Yeah, that's really interesting though. This is sort of like the meaning behind things, the cultural significance, color psychology and all of these things. Knowledge, which is sort of, on the one hand, it is insights analyzed and gathered over time, but at a much different scale, I suppose. Cool. I think that makes today's episode on being data-driven versus being data-informed. Talking about insights. So let's talk about what we are grateful for this week.
So I have been working on a bit of a difficult piece of functionality at work, and it's kind of been almost breaking my brain for the last couple of weeks. And I think I finally had a bit of a breakthrough. Also got to collaborate with a fellow designer as well on this, and yeah, just grateful that I am out of the woods, or at least almost out of the woods with that feature, and also just grateful that I can also pick my colleagues' brains when needed as well. Also grateful that I'm going to be able to put this, just finally put this piece of feature together. And I'm just really grateful that I'm almost done with it because it's been, just a bit intense for my brain for the last few weeks. So I am glad to see an end to it. Although it was enjoyable to design it, but very glad it's ending.
it's like a really hard workout. Here I am with my gym metaphors again, but you know, it's like, it's tough when you're in the middle of it, but then it feels great when you're done or when you're on the other side.
What about you?
I'm grateful this week, or this past month, this year, really, these last 2 years, actually. Forever grateful. I'm grateful to BSEAN, which stands for the British East and Southeast Asian Network, which is this organization, I guess, championing for East and Southeast Asian interests in the community in the UK. They formed out of the sad the sad context around racism out of COVID in the beginning of 2020. And that's when also when I discovered them, because I discovered one of the founder's podcasts and started listening to it. And it's been so nice to see that organization and the community around be seen grow in the years since the pandemic started. And I'm especially grateful these days because in September, they host or organize the East and Southeast Asian Heritage Month. So this September was the second one. First one last year, obviously. And I hope it sticks as a thing. And it's, yeah, I'm just grateful for all the hard work they do, all the events and things and the platforming they do to share stories from the community. Really good work. Okay, this was episode 57. We talked about data-driven and data-informed design processes and design decisions in the context of our insights theme. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thank you for listening.